You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Patricia Highsmith's novels are the stuff nightmares are made of. Her best-known character was the sociopath Tom Ripley, and her books are filled with murder, misanthropy, and the darkest side of human nature. Joan Shenker's new biography, The Talented Miss Highsmith, suggests the author's life was as compelling as any story she wrote. It is published by St. Martin's Press. I'm very pleased it has brought Joan Shenker to our show today. Hi.
Good afternoon.
Now, Patricia Highsmith was a guest on this show a few years before she died, and what I remember best about her was that she looked almost reptilian, like a sea turtle, and she was not all that forthcoming in her answers. In fact, she was one of the more difficult guests I've had over the years.
That would have been Miss Highsmith.
Did you ever meet her?
I did not, and probably the best way to meet her is the way I met her, which is in her archives and reading her work. I spent the last 8 years of my life shut up in small rooms all over the globe with the talented Miss Highsmith, and I can tell you it was quite an experience. She is maybe the most dangerously inventive criminal imagination I've ever encountered.
And a major departure from your previous subject, Oscar Wilde's niece.
Indeed, which was a delight to do. Dolly Wilde was heaven to wake up to every morning.
So how did you wind up choosing Highsmith as a subject?
You know, you never choose these things. They kind of choose you. I was looking for a reason to stay in France. I had read some of Highsmith's work and been impressed by it, though not as impressed as I am now, because I hadn't read it so closely. And I thought, Highsmith, why not? And so I began.
Well, she has been a favorite of filmmakers. Do her books still sell well today?
She is a huge star in Europe. She's a bestseller in at least 5 countries. She could not leave her house in France or England or Switzerland without being gently accosted on the street. She's completely recognizable. And the myth that she loved to float, which is that she was a misanthropic recluse. The misanthropic part certainly was correct. She's the most social recluse who ever lived. Her reclusivity extended to things like inviting a well-known journalist from a well-known French magazine to live in her house for 3 days while the woman wrote an article about her. Recluses do not do this. She always had an eye on her reputation.
Although, as I said, she was not an easy interview, and I wondered why. She had agreed to come out and promote whatever the book was at the time or the collection was at the time. I can't remember.
Well, you've identified the great split, one of the great splits that Highsmith lived with. She needed absolute silence and peace for her work, but she also knew she needed to bring that work out in the world. And so she would reluctantly agree to do interviews and magazine articles. She was immensely prolific, resenting every moment of it. She used to get up and walk out of interviews if she was seriously annoyed. So she must have had a good time with you.
She stayed the whole time.
This is a compliment.
But some people have trouble reading an author like Céline because of some of his hateful ideas. Was that a problem with you, with Highsmith, because she was also anti-Semitic?
You could call her an equal opportunity hater, I think.
But where does that come from?
Where do any of those prejudices come from? They come from a tremendous sense of inadequacy and the wonderful opportunity to project all your inadequate feelings on a minority. Miss Highsmith challenged me on every level of my being.
Because many biographers have told me that on some level you have to like the person you're spending so much time with.
It took me about 3 years to discover what a great comic character Miss Highsmith was. And the moment I did, and the moment I found the voice to convey that, it was fine. Until then, I struggled mightily with her. And not just because of her prejudices. The work itself is incredibly dangerous. I have never seen an author so willing to buy the hand that bites it.
She was accused of being a misogynist. This is a woman.
She certainly was a misogynist. She also loved and adored women. She lived with every split, every great chasm you can imagine. It's not a mistake that she's a great proponent of the alter ego. Her alter ego, of course, was Thomas P. Ripley.
And a male.
A male, and she wrote most of her books in a kind of transgendered voice, and very successfully, too. She's as brilliant on, you know, a gay male, unconscious gay male novelist as Ernest Hemingway, and she's as good on male sexual anxiety as Norman Mailer is.
Now, and Norman Mailer talked to you about her, didn't he?
He did. He couldn't. This is one of those instances that shows how little known she was in America. He could barely recollect who she was. She had left the country long before he became prominent.
But as I said, lots of films were made based on her novels, not just French films, American films, going
millions.
All the way back to Hitchcock.
German, English. She had, her eyes scan objects like cameras. So they're ready-made for film, but there's not a filmmaker yet who has faced the real interesting quality of her work.
Now, you mentioned that she almost could be transgendered in her writing and her approach to characters. I get the feeling that that was almost the way she was in her real life. She was a lesbian, but not a typical lesbian, if there is such a thing.
I don't know if there's a typical anything, but Highsmith certainly was the exception to every category. She loved and adored women, and because
of her...
She almost
got married at one point to a man.
She almost got married a couple of times. She did her best to try to love men, but it was not within her gift, as the English say, and they would always disappoint her because she held those relations to the same high bar that she held the relation she had with women, something to absolutely delight her, which women did.
Now, you had a lot of material available to you. How much of this is revealed in her cahiers, her notebook, her notebooks and her diaries?
Well, her split extended to the fact that she kept special notebooks, which she called cahiers, in which she put down her artistic ideas. And then, from the age of 20 on, she kept diaries in 5 different languages.
Which Why?
She said it was to practice the languages. I think it was an easy way for her to displace some of the really astonishingly extreme things she was doing from her. And that's where she recorded her sexual life and her emotional life.
And she had an obsession with charts, diagrams, and plans.
Oh, it was wonderful. She loved to keep lists. So here's a woman whose emotional life is so chaotic, it resembles a volcano. Every day she would get up and order it with a list, with a sometimes false chronology of the events that had happened to her, which is why I did not do a chronological biography. She used chronology as a kind of deception. It helped her to feel that she was a normal person. She was not normal. In the best sense of the word.
Well, you mentioned you didn't do a chronological biography. The New York Times review of this book noted that you are no ordinary biographer. Why did you move things around?
The force of Highsmith's character that made me do it. I believe that biographies should take the shape of the life of the subject that you're dealing with. Her life and her writing were completely obsessional. So I organized this biography according to her obsessions. It worked very well.
And one of the lists is so scary. It's Little Crimes for Little Tots.
It's a wonderful list. She had Highsmith, who spent 7 secret years as probably the only female script writer for comics during the golden age of American comics, had much occasion to write for children since comics were children's food then. And I think at that time, she made that list in the early 1970s, living in France. She was thinking of little criminal things that children could do. Each one of them involves murdering someone or injuring someone. And then she ended the list with her own idea of how many blows it would take for her to kill an 8-year-old. She had a very interesting imagination.
Now, where does this all come from? What were her parents like?
Again, an absolutely exceptional birth. She was born 9 days after her parents' divorce in her grandmother's boarding house in Fort Worth, Texas. Her mother, who, very interesting woman, an artist and an illustrator, immediately left for Chicago to get work. Her grandmother, a stern and admirable Calvinist woman, raised her for her first 6 years. When Highsmith was 3 and a half, her mother remarried and broke Highsmith's heart. If ever anyone was in love with her mother, it was Patricia Highsmith. And the reverse was true. They were like terrible twins, and their lifelong letters to each other have the force and venom of disappointed love letters.
Did she have any relationship with her real father?
When she met him first when she was 12, and then again when she was 17, during which time she suggests that he was inappropriately amorous with her. But all her life she held him up as an ideal. He too was an illustrator, and Highsmith, of course, herself drew and painted all the time. She was so split that she wrote with her right hand and drew with her left. So he became her ideal. The mother became the parent with whom she could be angry.
Well, the mother told her that she had tried to abort her.
The mother, when the mother and father were first married, they were trying their luck as illustrators in Manhattan, and it was the father who suggested that it was too early to have a child. She should try to abort. So she drank turpentine. Well, it didn't work. She decided she'd be much better off divorcing the father and raising the child in peace. And until she died, Highsmith loved the smell of turpentine.
How did Highsmith wind up in New York?
It's, once again, when her mother married again, the parents settled in New York to get work as illustrators. They sent for her. They first lived in Queens. And, in fact, I was the artist in residence in the very library little Patsy Highsmith used to read illegally pilfered abnormal psychology books at the age of 9. So even then, she was beginning her career.
And when did she start writing the books that we associate with her? How old was she?
Well, she was very young. She came out of the gate with a dash. She was in her late 20s when she started the Strangers on a Train, and it was bought immediately by Hitchcock.
And then her second book, A Dish of Salt, was
A Price of Salt was a
story of a lesbian love affair.
It was
rather early publishing of that kind of book.
It was the first, really, and Highsmith was so embarrassed and ashamed by it that she had to publish it under a pseudonym. So that was published under a pseudonym in 1952. It wasn't until 1990 that she could bear to publish it under her own name.
Do you have favorites? Do you think the Ripley books are her best work?
I think I have about 5 or 6 favorites, I think. And I think those 5 or 6 are among the most unsettling books written in the last half of the last century.
And why are they unsettling? Is it the way she, her use of language, or the fact that there's a kind of amoral side to them?
Actually, she was extremely moral. All her life, she wrote about Jesus Christ and what an icon he was for her, and how if only she could imitate his behavior. In fact, she did exactly the opposite, and that's what's so interesting about her. She reverses every expectation you've ever had about what should happen to people who commit crimes. That's why she's so interesting. And she went to the ends of her nerves to bring back the news. Very few people do that.
She rarely wrote about married couples, but she did write about married pigeons.
her happiest couple, the happiest couple in any of her novels, is a pair of snails, Edgar and Hortense.
She was obsessed by snails.
She kept snails all her life. She liked to watch them copulate, as a matter of fact.
I can only guess how snails copulate.
Very lengthily.
Because
lengthily.
They have big shells.
They have shells, but everyone can manage.
Mm-hmm. What did she think of the movies that were made from her books? Did she just sell the book and hope for the best?
Well, she never hoped for the best. This is Patricia Highsmith. She actively disliked most of them, as a matter of fact, but understood that once you let something out of your grasp, you no longer control it. She was extremely pained at first by what Wim Wenders did with Tom Ripley. But she loved Alain Delon in the first French version of Ripley, which was called Purple Noon, mm-hmm. Plein Soleil. And she loved it only because he was so beautiful, which he certainly was.
She didn't get to see the later Ripley
show. She did not. She died in 95. Again, that's a very glossy version of Ripley.
She left this country, went to Mexico, then to France.
First to England, then to Switzerland, then to Italy, then to France, then to Switzerland. Her mother said she was born restless, and she was certainly born dislocated. So everywhere she went, she found an excuse to leave.
And you say she never developed.
No, she was, but, you know, Oscar Wilde said that only mediocrities develop. She came out of that womb with everything she needed to do the job she did. And she did it better than anyone I can think of.
Well, she sure did write some books that continue to freak us out.
Bless her. Her best talent.
And you have kind of you've given us a Patricia Highsmith who helps us understand better why somebody like Tom Ripley would even come out of her imagination.
I think that is the purpose of a biography, to give, especially of a writer, to limb the limits of that imagination, describe the conditions that produced it, and show what it did.
Joan Shanker's biography of Patricia Highsmith, which is published by St. Martin's Press, is called The Talented Miss Highsmith, The Secret Life and Serious Art of Patricia Highsmith. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Joan Shanker will be speaking and signing books, and the wonderful actress Kathleen Chalfant will be reading tonight at 7 at the Upper West Side Barnes & Noble store that's at Broadway at 82nd Street. Up next, our gurus of how-to, Al and Larry Ubell, will be answering your questions about home repair. You can call us at 212-433-9692 or leave a comment on our show page at wnyc.org. And this is WNYC and wnyc.org.